Welcome. I'm standing in front of a Buddha image, large, beautiful Buddha. I love this Buddha. And, well, we're a Buddhist center, so of course there's a Buddha on the shrine. And sometimes in Buddhist iconography, you'll see Buddhas like we see on some of these tankas around the room, up in the sky and radiant with an aura all around them, exuding light. Light shining in all directions. And sometimes, in some of these depictions, the light shines from the Buddha to perhaps a great teacher of the past, and then through a lineage of teachers to one's own teacher, and from that teacher to oneself. At least you can imagine that's happening. So light is a very important part of Buddhist imagery. The light of the Dharma, the light of the truth. But where there's light, there are also shadows. So tonight, I'm going to talk about the shadows. Because if you want to see the whole picture, you need to include what you're not seeing, what's there in the shadows. And that's not easy to talk about, because the nature of shadows is we don't want to look at them. Well, actually, we can't see them because they're not illuminated. But actually, the kind of shadows that I'm talking about are the ones we don't want to see. And so I'm going to be talking about some of the difficulties that we've had in Triratnam, in our Buddhist movement. And if you've come along to the Buddhist Center relatively newly, as I'm sure some of you have, you've probably come along for the light. There's enough darkness in the world, and there's enough darkness in our hearts, that we don't need to go looking for more of it. And yet, what can I say? You've come along to a Buddhist center which has a history, and I'm going to be talking about that history for the sake of wholeness, because that's what I believe in. So I want to go back, by way of starting, to my ordination retreat, to 1992. It's quite a long time ago, and I was on the ordination retreat with this good man here, Pramudita. So we're coming up to our 25th anniversary in the order. I'd already been around for quite a long time, because I'd actually started off when I was 14. I first came along to a Buddhist center when I was 14 years old, and I'm now 52. That was in Croydon. And the first 8 years of my involvement, even though I'd gone to university towards the end of that time, were involvement with the Croydon Buddhist center. And there'd been a lot of problems at that center, to put it mildly. So my early experience was of something that really had quite an unpleasant side to it. The way we talked about it and the way we thought about it was very much in terms of the light. It was an incredibly exciting place to be, and a lot of young people were attracted. There was an art center. We were talking about how we bring the Dharma together with Western culture, which for someone like me was very, very exciting. But at the same time, there was a lot of coercion, a lot of bullying, and a certain amount of sex when it shouldn't have been there. So that had been my early experience. And as a result, you can see I'm a rather old hand with the shadow side of our movement. But I'd come through that. I'd survived it somehow with my Buddhism intact. That's actually another story that I'm not going to tell tonight. But I had quite a lot of doubts, and I had an inclination to look into the shadows. I was interested in the things that we weren't talking about, because I'd had the experience of being somewhere where we really hadn't talked about the most important things. So on the day before my ordination, day before my private ordination, I went for a walk with my prospective preceptor, who was someone called Subhuti, who's, you know, one of the most senior members of our order. The retreat was in a mountainous Spanish valley. So most of the time we're in the valley, but then there were these great craggy rocks on either side of the valley. And we walked up, Subhuti and I, up one of these one of these heights. And as we were up there, just talking about the retreat, how I was, bearing in mind that we'd been in silence. I hadn't actually talked to anyone for about 3 or 4 weeks before then. And I'd just been hearing Subhuti give a lot of talks. And so there was a lot to talk about. And also, I was about to be ordained, which really does concentrate your mind. It sort of brings to mind the most important things. And I think because my experience in Triratna had already included quite a lot of difficulties, and I'd come through that, as I was approaching ordination, I was aware, and this period of intensive meditation that we were doing, of certain areas that still felt difficult and felt unresolved. So I talked to Subhuti about them. And what we talked about was our teacher, Sangharakshita, who I'm going to be calling both Sangharakshita and Bante, because that's the kind of colloquial term we use for him in Triratna. And I very much appreciate Bante as a teacher, as a writer, which is mainly how I'd come to know him. And latterly, I've come to know him as a person. But I was aware that there was a certain issue. In fact, there are a number of issues with Bante, but the one that was in my mind and that I wanted to talk to Subhuti about was the fact that he had been sexually active with some of his students. Being gay, it was with male students. And the story we'd been told, the story he said, was, well, this was just part of him exploring how to move on from his earlier life as a celibate monk and to be open, be communicating with people, be making connections with people, to be a Kalyana Mitra, a spiritual friend to them. And as it happens, I believe that was all quite genuine. But part of that was getting involved with people sexually, and particularly young men. Now, I say these words in 2017, and I think our perspective on such things is now very clear, because we've had decades, really, of increasingly intense coverage of sexual abuse scandals in every institution you can mention. And obviously, you know, those have been very problematic and traumatic. But even going back to 1992, I was aware anyway that this seemed quite problematic to me. Now, at that point, there'd really only been one person who'd been a previous partner who had actually raised any objections to what had happened. Quite a lot of other people were saying it was great, it was fantastic, it opened me up emotionally. I had those conversations with people. But there was one person. Nonetheless, it just struck me as being intrinsically unwise, if you're in a position of a teacher, to get involved with your students sexually. Even if it all goes absolutely fine and everyone is completely happy about it, there's a risk that it won't be fine and they won't be happy about it. And it is unwise to take that risk. So that was quite clear to me in 1992. I partly mention that just to give a sense that this issue is not something that's new to any of us in the order. Some of us have been talking about it for decades. And I partly say that because every time this issue is revived in discussion, a lot of people, including people who've been around for nearly as long as me, seem to be saying that we've never talked about this before. So we really have. So that's what I said to Subhuti. And Subhuti said to me, by way of reply, we talked about it, we backed it back and forth, and he said, look, I don't know what to make of it. I don't know what to say about that. I just know what I see in Sangharakshita. You know, I'm with him a lot. I see his qualities. I see how much further he is on than me. And I really respect Subhuti. And that's the best answer I can give you, which I thought was a very honest answer, actually. That made a difference to me, just having it acknowledged, even as something we couldn't really make sense of, and that Subhuti wasn't trying to make light of to me. That made a difference. And the next day, I was ordained. I'm going to come back and say a little bit more about that. But I just wanted to start with that story.